Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 16, where we're going to talk about the recent changes impacting customers on Office 365 with special guest Mark Anderson.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
All right, we got a special show today. So before we get started, how are you doing, my brother from down under?
Oh, I'm a little jet-lagged, I gotta say. Although we're only 3 hours different, you know, sometimes it's the smaller jet lag numbers. Well, sorry, the smaller time difference numbers, I should say, that screw me up the most. So I flew down to New Zealand a couple of days ago and brought the wife and kids. So, you know, it's a great way to start a holiday is by wanting to stab yourself in the face by taking children on a 12-hour flight. So, but we made it. So glad to be here. But, yeah, a little shady, but nice to see you guys.
Yeah, good to see you too, man. Good to see you too. And, yeah, it's been a busy week or so. I mean, I did finally get news today that that Pluralsight class that I've been worked on, waiting to be published, it's going to go live tomorrow, the workflow and web services. So by the time this podcast is live, everyone will it'll definitely be live and you'll see it. We're recording this on February the 5th, so we're usually about a week or so delayed while we get all the stuff kind of buttoned up. But yeah, it's been busy, just kind of plugging away and staying busy. So what do you say we dive into the news here, and then we got a special show that I'll explain in just a minute. This past week, again, we're recording this on February the 5th. So this past week, Office 365 celebrated their first birthday, which, as we'll see, we're having some teething problems that is kind of the subject of this podcast today. I promised to be a little bit more subdued than I was in the last episode, where I flew off the chain a little bit from the whole SkyDrive OneDrive discussion that we had.
Yeah, it's good to be heated and passionate about this stuff, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I wasn't comfortable with leaving, as everyone's probably, of those of you who have listened to the episode, I wasn't as comfortable leaving some of the language in the recording, so we've got a couple little bleep out spots that I decided to insert in there.
Excellent. since it's Office 365's first birthday, are you going to do one of these your world famous Marilyn Monroe birthday impersonations for us?
I was going to, but my dress is at the cleaners. So
it's being used too often.
We'll see who actually listens to us, and because I'll go ahead and say it that I'll wear it at SPC in Vegas. So let's see how many people actually listen to the show that I'll actually bring that up, but.
Nice. I'm bringing a camera for sure.
Oh, crap. Like everybody doesn't have a camera these days unless you got a flip phone. So two other bits of news here. I guess two other bits of interesting news that are cloud related, and then we'll have some big news too, as everyone's probably aware by now, is that this past week, Microsoft also announced two new virtual machine instance types or sizes that we can have in the Azure cloud. One of them is a monster, it's a monster until you see the second one. The first one is an 8 virtual CPU cores with 56 gigs of RAM. And then they also have a new one that is going to be 16 virtual cores with 112 gigabytes of RAM, which would make just one hell of a Minecraft shared server. What do you think?
I was going to say Minesweeper, but yeah, Minecraft works too.
Is there a network version of Minesweeper? That'd be awesome.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. But somebody should do that for sure.
I want to be Saddam Hussein and be moving my mines while you're trying to play it.
Brilliant. Yeah, these are pretty interesting, especially for the world of SharePoint land with large resource requirements and so forth. So, you know, it's interesting to see them adding these different types. I'm keen to see the day when they move to just pick your number of cores and pick your amount of RAM and just have a flexible slider back and forth in Azure. I think that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Obviously, see, that's a little bit difficult, but yeah, interesting.
It is. It's when you look at the menu of options that you have over the AWS space, it's still a smaller option, and they're still focusing just on the CPU and the RAM specs. They haven't really gone so much into like the graphics GPUs for like with different CUDA cores and stuff that we have over on the AWS side. But I mean, they're adding stuff left and right. We got those cloud wars are nice and strong this year. So
yeah, excellent.
Another bit of news that I saw today, which is pretty slick, is that NBC the Winter Olympics has decided I guess they decided this a while ago, but there's an article that we'll link to in the show notes where they're actually using the Windows Azure mobile or media services to do a lot of transcoding and encoding and delivery of a bunch of their HD video from the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia, that are starting later this week. I find it very interesting because probably the most significant point of this is that guess who they used for the last Olympics or the last few Olympics to do the same service?
AWS.
YouTube.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. So Azure Media Services won out on the job from YouTube. So that's pretty impressive.
That's pretty impressive considering you think, you know, YouTube is the king of online video stuff. And the fact that they chose Azure to do it, it'll be cool to see maybe some technical white papers or some information about what they used it and exactly how they used it. It'd make a good case study.
Yeah, definitely. It'll be really cool to see where this comes out. So our friend Dan Holm is over there. He's doing a lot of stuff for NBC and so NBC Sports. And so it'd be really cool to get him on the show to actually talk about some of the stuff that he saw and how they were using the cloud and everything. But
that's a great idea. Yeah.
But yeah, so the other really big bit of big news that we saw this past week is you coming up with a really bad prediction that you couldn't follow through on. And I think it seems to have I got my guy, which is Satya Nadella was picked as the CEO for the next CEO for Microsoft, which they say is the third CEO. It's more like a 2.5 because Bill's back as well. I love the move and I saw that in the last just recently too that they also bumped up and promoted Scott Guthrie, the Goo, to take over Satya's old spot, which I think that personally I think both those moves are fantastic. I love them the way on the surface today. I love the fact that Bill Gates is involved as well in the position that he's in and that Satya actually requested to get involved. And so now it's just balls in your court, Microsoft. I'd love to see what you do with this, but you got a huge opportunity now to really make a bunch of changes.
Yeah, so I think you won our bet. You predicted that Satya was going to get it. I said that I would like Stephen Elop, but I thought that Kevin Turner was going to get it, at least temporarily. So yeah, congratulations on your win. But hey, I think with Bill coming back, everyone's a winner.
Agreed. And Scott,
I'm very bullish about that. I think that's really cool that he's going to dedicate some more time. And you know, Satya's strong technical leader. I didn't think he had quite the level of business acumen that was required that I saw from with Elop, but hey, I'm happy to be proven wrong, and I hope he does a really great job.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, so let's move on to the meat of the show and what we're going to talk about today. If those of you who are deep in the SharePoint space, specifically, I'd say more on the implementation from everybody that's doing any kind of customizations from developers to front-end developers to designers, web developers, you name it. I'd be surprised if some people at least, or most of us, were not aware of some of the things that have gone on, I would say, maybe the last 2-3 weeks-ish. And that is around Office 365. Specifically, they've made some changes to the rendering of Office 365 after making a few other changes to the APIs earlier in the year, and it's caused some customer grief and challenges. And it really brings in up some big questions here. So what we wanted to do here, what CJ and I wanted to do, was we wanted to bring in somebody who is very well respected in this place and is one of the people that I look to for a lot of opinions and insights and kind of just forward guidance here, and that's Mark Anderson. So Mark is a co-founder and president of Syraxis Consulting, LLC. Hopefully I didn't say that too poorly. Located in the Boston suburb of Newton, Massachusetts in the United States. He focuses on enabling collaboration throughout the enterprise using the SharePoint application platform. He's got over 30 years experience in technology, professional services, and software development. and over a wide-ranging career in consulting, as well as line manager positions, Mark has proven himself as a problem solver and leader who can solve difficult technology problems for organizations across a wide variety of industries and organizational sizes. And he is also the author and the spearhead behind SP Services, a client-side library that really helps you to achieve a lot of stuff. So, Mark, thank you very much for joining us. You've got the fine distinction of being our very first interviewee on the show.
No pressure, right? You read all that, and I wonder who the hell you're talking about. And you tell me it's the first time, and oh, God, I gotta be smarter.
That's okay. We only do the audio. We don't do the video, so we can all cut up as much as we like. Very casual conversation, right? So
excellent. Yeah, thanks for coming along, Mark.
Yeah, glad to be
so, I guess there's a couple posts that we're going to reference that we've seen on I've written on my blog, Mark's written on his blog, and they're references to things in Stack Exchange and in forums and different questions that have come up. And what I wanted to do is I just kind of wanted to have just a dialogue. And I know we all kind of have different opinions here because I know that CJ and I both commented on the thread that you had on your blog post and the thread that was generated from that in the comment section. I always love those kind of posts that always test the vertical width of a site and, or the horizontal width of a site and make sure things are getting too scrunched up and people are, I commented on one thing and some guy chimed in and said, that's funny. You said the exact same thing I said. And I'm like, our timestamps are about two off. So there might've been a moderation kind of like gap there, but at any rate, it's a contentious thing. Some people think that it's overblown. Some people think that it's not overblown. But I guess get your take on, if you want to give us a bit of a synopsis, Mark, on what you've seen over the last few weeks. And we'll just have a discussion. Just go from there.
Well, I mean, you and I know exactly what we've seen. I think your blog post, AC, made the best summary out of everybody's. But the basic idea is that over the last couple of weeks, there have been some changes, an update that rolled out to Office 365, SharePoint Online, that made some changes to what is delivered to the browser in the DOM, the Document Object Model. Some of the things that were changed are things that we've relied on for better or worse, and I think some people are having a great time laughing at people like me and all of this. See, you shouldn't have been doing that all along. But for the last 8 years, we've been using certain pieces in the DOM to identify fields and to start to manipulate things in forms and in pieces of pages. So as those changes rolled out, people's custom scripts started to break. And, you know, there's a lot of people who were using SP services because my stuff started to break. But a lot of other stuff that they've done started to break, too. So what we had was a set of changes that nobody expected, no one knew it was coming, that started to break people's custom code. And that's obviously not a good thing.
Yeah.
That's my quick summary, yeah. Right?
And I think, you know, to kind of expand on the other things that we saw, I guess let me take a step back, is that earlier in 2013, we saw Microsoft do a couple updates around, and we're going to keep using the terms Office 365, but I think that from my point of view, this is kind of a, because all the parts of Office 365, SharePoint is the one that is the most programmable, the most extensible, and the most customizable. So this is where I've only seen these issues is in the SharePoint space. So when we say Office 365, we really mean just the SharePoint Online piece. Back in 2013, we saw some stuff, and there were some posts that I know we've referenced before on the pod show, on the podcast, that like Jeremy Thake has written about. Where changes to the APIs either have introduced a bug that have broken some code from some different products that are out there in different ways, and then customers have been left kind of looking at both Microsoft and the vendor and the app developer to say, hey, the app's broken, who's going to fix it? And the app developer is kind of like, the API broke, we have nothing we can do with this. And in fact, only some people are affected by it because the whole platform doesn't get updated at once. It kind of is an update that rolls out. That even though we look at Office 365 as a cloud platform, it really is a cloud of collections of multiple SharePoint farms, if not hundreds or thousands of farms. So those rollouts, those updates only happen to certain ones. So that was on the server side, and everybody had their issues that popped up around that. And now these are popping up more. They're still originating from the server side, but they're things that are being much more manifested, not in the APIs, like the REST API or the client-side object model API or the JavaScript object model, but they're issues that are arising from really from the CSS and the DOM. And what some of the things that like that Mark is referring to are like we've seen different strings get appended to certain attributes and different elements. And that's broken certain jQuery selectors that people are using, like trying to grab a field name or something. Another one that we saw was, and this was the really big one for me, is that we saw the IDs of certain elements on the page getting changed. And I just stated my opinion on that one. The one that really, that one got under my skin the most. The other ones I was like, it's kind of a pain, but it's kind of like this whole like, you know, chess match back and forth. You do this, I got to fix this, I got to fix this. But the last one is the one that we changed the ID. That's the one that really got under my skin because we've all looked at IDs as being a unique thing, but now all of a sudden they change. And not only did they change, the IDs changed from using the word suite as a prefix to using O365. So any code that's referencing an ID is now going to break. And not only that, if I write an app that someone gets from the store that's written to work both on-prem and in the and locally, that's extending something in the UI, then I have to write it to look for two different IDs because now there's an on-prem ID, at least for now, unless those O365 IDs trickle down in a cumulative update or something. But then again, is that going to happen because they're not Office 365 on-prem? So I don't know. I think it's a challenging thing, and it raises a bigger question here.
Yeah, I think I chimed in on your thread, Mark, on your website or on your blog about when the first one came up around title. And, you know, my point on that was, like, titles, you know, semantically title is not something good to key off, and it doesn't surprise me that things change, right? But the ID one is a whole, for me at least, the ID one is a whole separate kettle of fish and is definitely, like, a more defensible position, I guess. About why it shouldn't change and all that sort of stuff, and I get the understanding or I get the need for that. You know, people have used title and so forth in the past and to get stuff done, and I completely understand that. I just the bit that I sort of don't understand is how we expect the UI not to change and for those things not to change over time and not break us when you know Microsoft are building the product. In such a way that, you know, that those things are going to have to change over time at some point. But I understand why it happens. But IDs, I completely agree. And I think I even made in my comments on that post was like, surely ID must be a better one to key off. Even having said that, you know, the next part of my point on this is, even if we do take a dependency on IDs, you know, if you're a software developer building a front end and you add some buttons with IDs or some divs with IDs and that sort of thing, and you want to grab them and do stuff with them, as a developer, I feel like it's still within my realm of responsibility. I don't know if that's quite the right word, or still within my jurisdiction to go and change those without telling anybody. And I say that because I should only need to commit to a contract of not changing them, at least that's the way I feel. I don't think I should have to commit to a contract of not changing them if I haven't called them an API, right? If I haven't sent you a contract and said, here's what you should be able to count on. Now, whether that's the case with SharePoint or not, that's debatable, right? Like that's the bit of this conversation that's going to get interesting. But taking a pure position, I don't feel like Microsoft have committed to developers that the UI is an API yet. And whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. But I imagine that would be the point of contention.
Yeah. So Mark, what do you think? CJ brings up a good point here about, you know, this is the one I raised in my blog post, but brings up the issue of, is the client side, and not just the client object model and the JavaScript object model and the REST API, not that kind of client side, but should Microsoft consider the rendered part of SharePoint? Should we consider that an API, or at least part of an API, or a subset, or is it a gray area? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, if we put the recent changes aside, I think the key thing that all of us can probably agree on is that we have to have some kind of contract, right? That bar is going to be at the top. We have to call it something, and that something has to be somewhat consistent, or at least we need to know when it's going to change. You know, if they had some sort of bulletin that said, hey, we're going to rename everything and we're going to stick this different prefix on it, then we all could have been ready for that. So the communication has to be better, and there has to be some sort of predictability. There's never been a contract around any of this. We've all been trying to come up with some way to make stuff work on the front end, and we've come up with conventions that worked over at least a release cycle, right? Now that we have these updates coming, we don't know when they're really going to happen. We don't know what they're going to do. There's even less predictability, you know, by a factor of something. So, you know, I get why I shouldn't rely on a title being a certain string or an ID having a certain structure, but I need to rely on something, right? Mm-hmm. If you give me a container, if you wrap a div around a field, we agree that it's always going to have the static name of a column, so at least I know that that's the thing that I need to look into, then at least we have some sort of common understanding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole page can change, but there are web standards that Microsoft doesn't seem to really want to think about. You know, sticking required field in for a screen reader is not a web standard. That's a way to do it, but it's not. You can use these area tags that are much more conventionally accepted. All standards evolve, etc. So what I'd like to see is coming out of this conversation that the product group says, oh, yeah, we did some stuff that caused people problems. How can we do this better? And not have that discussion take 4 years.
Yep. I agree.
Totally agreed.
That's the, you know, when you said the area tag, you mean the ARIA. And those, yeah, and those are the attributes that they can put on certain elements, right? Not that they're not tags. They're actually, okay. Just making sure I got that.
Yeah. Sorry. They're attributes on HTML.
Yeah. It seems to me that, you know, what, I guess let's, when you look at a challenge that we have like this, I think, you know, the first thing we have to do is we have to, of course, we're going to solve this for Microsoft free consulting right here. So all in about 20 minutes.
That's all it should take, right?
Yeah. Right. That's what we think. So, I mean, if we look at where we are today, we look at the challenges that we have, and I think we just kind of enumerated through a bunch of those. And that, you know, my point is that I do think that, you know, we need it with Microsoft pushing us, from my perspective, they're pushing us off the server as far as SharePoint goes. They don't want us to be doing anything on the server unless it's fully declarative. I get that. It's good for the platform. It's good for us. It's good for extensibility. It's good for upgrades. They want us to do all of our stuff off the box. That means on a separate physical box, like on Azure, AWS, IIS box, and our local on-prem, whatever. And then they also want, or we can do stuff in the client, like on the browser, and that's using things like JavaScript and the different presentation frameworks and such. So if they want us to be off the server, and they want us to be using things like client-side technologies, you be able to talk to things, talking back to SharePoint, using the client object model, the JavaScript object model, the REST API, then if they also want us to be able to extend the user experience, and maybe not so much extending the user experience, but be able to like to hook into different things and add light up functionality in certain ways, right? We need to be able to tie into certain elements and attach ourselves to certain elements and do certain things. What I would like to see
and that's the key, and what we want, we
have to change the whole UI. But what it seems to me is that once we identify where the problems are, you look at where could we go to? It seems that one of the easiest things that they could do, and I don't see how this could break anything by having this roll out through the entire platform over the next X months or whatever, X years, is using the HTML5 standard tag attribute of data dash. So let's just define a data dash SP or data dash 0365, and then have things like dash field ID or dash this. Those would be great things for us to tie into, because then we're tying as internal names. Those don't change. They're programmatic, immutable things that we can always rely on. You can change title to your heart's content, display name to your heart's content, or the bodies or whatever. But as long as those elements are there and I can test for them, things are in a much better shape.
this is all very well and good, except the first question is, do Microsoft want you to have the UI as an API?
It's a great question. And that's the one, it's the one that seems to kind of be dodged in this whole thing. And what I would like, I hope to see this discussion take place in a month that we have over at the SharePoint conference in Las Vegas, right?
So one thing that I think has made it very clear that Microsoft does want the client side to be mutable by us is that they've come up with these things called display templates. Right? They're HTML driven with JavaScript. They're a pain in the neck to work with. Whoever built them the way they are never did JavaScript work because you don't work in comments, right? But they are what they are. And basically, they're an entirely client-side HTML and JavaScript driven display mechanism. If we want to write custom display templates, and Ben Nyland did a great post today with some really cool stuff to show you just the kind of amazing things you can get done, we have to have some sort of understanding about what the construct within which we're working is, right? So we have to know that there's a container around it and we can do stuff inside it. If anything changes about that container, then we've got problems, right? We can't march up and down the DOM in an efficient way in that display template. So that's a great example of Microsoft basically saying, look, this is how we want you to do this stuff. So they need to support that. They need to understand that in that display template, as an example, we're going to assume a certain context around it, and they can't mess with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the SharePoint forms, frankly, you know, they haven't changed since 2007. I mean, there's been zero innovation there. So the changes that they're making, one would like to think, is actually going to move it forward. But in the places where they have innovated, they are telling us to go to the client side. So we have to have a good set of rules around. And there hasn't been any discussion about it that I know about.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, you say that we haven't seen any kind of innovation around forms. I mean, we have seen some. I guess we forgot to mention in the news. In my eyes, it was probably the best news that I've seen in a while. Next to this, you know, new CEO Satya, is that InfoPath is now officially, well, I wouldn't say that InfoPath is dead because it's still supported for another 10 years. I would just say that no new version, so InfoPath has been sterilized. So
there you go.
So
this is huge news. We should cover it again in another episode and talk in depth about it. But yeah, that's huge.
I'm looking for some party background music to play during that one. So that's why it's a future episode. So the thing is, you know, we have seen some improvements here around the form stuff where the client side rendering framework, right? Or the client side rendering stuff that they've done about changing the way stuff is rendered. And that's all done doing the stuff that we're talking about, which is overriding existing functionality that has been built using JavaScript and HTML and CSS. The only thing that's really negative on the CSR side, from my point of view, is that there just hasn't been the follow through that we needed for the documentation, the API. And it is just everybody that's written a great blog post about it has just peeled back the onion so far to figure it out. And it's awesome stuff when you get into it. It's like a display template. If you can figure out a display template, it's awesome stuff what you can accomplish. So we see that they want us to be able to, like Mark said, they want us to go through and change these different pieces. But we you're right. We need to have some sort of rules that are in place there. It'd be great to have some sort of like a roundtable discussion at the SharePoint conference with people on the engineering team about what could we do to kind of get these things, to do things to make it better for this and to see these things roll out sooner. If anything, let's just start with what we have right now. Enumerate through the ones that you say, these are off limits to changes without prior knowledge or prior announcement. Hey, here comes a breaking change. This is when this is going to roll out in this time frame, in this version. And then some sort of a change. I mean, it's something we've been begging for on the Office 365 side for a while. A change log of the things that are being done, like we get with a service pack and a knowledge base article that shows up on TechNet.
Or just,
yeah,
you know,
so actually on that, what would you ask for out of, you know, if they came to you at SharePoint conference and sat you down and said, how would you want this approached? What are the kinds of things that you think the community and developers in general would benefit from around being notified of changes and that sort of dialogue and things? What would be the perfect kind of outcome for you on that?
Well, I think even the opening up the communication, I mean, these updates come out, we actually don't know when we're going to get them, and we don't know what they're going to do. And people say, ooh, I've got a new button over here. But that, that they don't notice necessarily the things that have changed in a negative way or in a way that the developers are going to have to fix, right? So I think if we knew what was coming on a general level, so, you know, in this next release, we're going to make some updates to the way screen readers deal with forms. That would be enough for me to say, I better watch for that, right? So at least they'd have a clue. Knowing when those updates are actually going to happen. You know, there is a schedule. It's not a public schedule. And that's making people very uncomfortable. And then just trying to come up with some sort of guidelines around how they're going to treat the UI. Because, I mean, there are legacy solutions out there all over the place that have upgraded fine into 2013. Some of them have gone straight to Office 365. They're there. And so rather than breaking things and finding out after the fact, if we had something to go on up front, that if the JavaScript, the client-side rendering stuff was documented better. You know, I have to step through their JavaScript in order to figure out what a function does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm building a display template. So there are just a lot of ways to open up the communication lines that I think would make a huge difference. It would make people feel better about what Microsoft does. Instead of feeling it's done to us, we would feel like it's done for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that alone would be a fantastic move for Microsoft.
Yeah, it's really a couple of, you make an interesting couple of points there, right? The first one is if they want us to be able to extend SharePoint UI in certain ways, then let's get it locked down and documented and registered as like a real API, and that will drive an internal set of mechanisms that we don't see on the outside world, but the way changes are made inside the SharePoint engineering team on the product, if something's an API, it's subject to a whole bunch of different scrutiny that that other things aren't subject to, because the need for backwards compatibility and things like that. So I just think some sort of official change in policy around these are the parts of the UI that we consider open for fiddling with, and you can take a dependency on, and here are the rules on how we're not going to change it or how we are going to change it, then that would be a really good first step. And then the second part of the question, or second part of the statement that you made around just, yeah, timelines and notifications and all of that kind of goes, is a really big topic that's obviously not just associated with UI, but every which way you extend and develop on top of SharePoint. So that's positive for everybody all around, right, regardless of what you're building.
Yeah, it really creates a challenge with these changes that just kind of come out of the blue. And not only, well, they come out of the blue from the perspective of the customer. Let me take a step back here. One thing that's different from Microsoft as a services company compared to so many other people is that Microsoft heavily relies on partners and solution integrators to go sell their services. And so there's a whole part of Office 365 where Microsoft doesn't really sell Office 365 directly to a lot of people. You have resellers go out and they sell it and they implement and they help you migrate your existing platform over to it. So I know I've helped people do that before. I know you guys have helped do that with people before as well. The part that, you know, I feel like I'm supposed to be a partner in this whole chain with Microsoft on 365 because I'm helping sell it. But when I turn around and as a partner, I'm going through and selling 365 to a customer, like in my case this week, getting feedback from a Fortune 500 customer, Fortune 100 customer that just sent me an email after they saw my blog post a comment go up on the Stack Exchange, on the SharePoint Stack Exchange forum that I referenced in my blog post. I'm putting together a blog post. As I put together that blog post, this guy emails me and says, I'm going to paraphrase it. The quote's in my blog, but he emails me and paraphrases something like, look, we've been on SharePoint since 2003. Then we went to 2007. Then we're on 2010. Then we're on 2013 on-prem. We migrated our 2013 on-prem to Office 365. And we could tell that, you know, in this version, we were being pushed farther and farther. Where were we doing our customizations? We were pushed off the server in 2013 effectively. And now, with a lot of the changes that we've made, we thought that we were doing things just fine and making changes to the interface using things, even cited saying, I've been using SP services, I've been using the REST API, I've been using the JavaScript API, and I'm doing a lot of it in my own JavaScript libraries that I'm referencing on the site using the brand new web part that I could use to inject script on the page, because we thought that Microsoft said it was cool to go through and run script on the page to make changes to stuff. And because they're so, they push jQuery and all the stuff now, I know that jQuery is available to us. That was the other change we forgot to mention, is that it looks like there's a reverse proxy of rerouting the, where
jQuery rewriting.
Yeah, yeah. jQuery.
Or the protocol, sorry, URL rewriting.
Yeah, protocol, mm-hmm. protocol less your references.
Were, that's actually been going on for years now. It's just, it happened on Office 365 without anyone touching anything. Mm. SharePoint Designer's been doing it for a long time. Mm. Still not good.
Yeah, and so it's, you saw that, let me finish this one thought here, is that you see people, they're making these changes, they say, we made all these changes here, we've been customizing SharePoint the way that we thought we were supposed to, we're not doing it with SharePoint Designer anymore because that looks like that's going away eventually, and we're not doing it with Farm Solutions, and we're not doing it with Sandbox Solutions, we're trying to do it with apps, and when we can't, we're doing script and we're just manually going through and deploying it in there, and then this happens, it's like, we don't know where we're supposed to take a dependency. Are we supposed to build everything outside of SharePoint? And then they raise the question, which isn't the first time I've heard this. The person raised the question of just saying, what's the value proposition of SharePoint for anything other than just lists and having BI? Now, granted, that's really going a little bit overboard or really jumping to a conclusion of saying that SharePoint provides no value other than just lists and libraries, which we all know that's not true. It does a lot of stuff. But to treat it as a platform, which we've been talking about for many years now. I've been doing this for 10 years. I've been saying almost for 10 years of using this as a platform for business applications. I can understand what the frustration was from coming from these guys. And it puts me in an awkward position because I don't feel like it's a defensible. Some of the things that have happened are very defensible. So,
yeah,
but it's, you know, even in the NDA sense that, you know, all of us are being able to have privy to certain things. You know, so a lot of the stuff hits us out of the blue as well. And it's like, how are we supposed to even react to this kind of stuff? So
I think it's interesting that the history of SharePoint has always been people adding things and extending it and all that sort of stuff in ways that Microsoft did and didn't necessarily expect, right? So, you know, in the early days of SharePoint, people were fiddling with, you know, files on the file system to add new things to SharePoint, right? And it kind of got to the point where it became so popular and was going so well that Microsoft had to start formalizing the ways that they would support people changing the product. And so kind of my point is, well, if people are doing this stuff in the UI, that Microsoft, like, give them the benefit of the doubt. Say they didn't bother looking at who was using these UI hooks in the ways they are being used and made the change unknowingly ended up breaking somebody or a bunch of people. But, you know, if people are doing this, then much like they fiddled with files way back when, then eventually there is an argument to be said, well, maybe they should be supported and maybe they should be treated as an API because, you know, reality is that people are doing this stuff and to keep everybody happy and up to date and supported, that's what needs to happen. So I guess my point is, you know, way back when there was stuff being done that wasn't necessarily API related or treated as an API, and eventually it now is. So maybe this is another next logical step of progression.
Yeah.
One interesting thing to me is, you know, the stuff that I do in SP services, you know, cascading dropdowns on a form. You know, it's a piece of functionality that, you know, thousands of people want. I've been doing it in the same way since you know, 2009 in SP services, right? Actually, I was doing it before that, before I put it out in public. So it's not like we haven't been doing this stuff for a long time and Microsoft shouldn't have seen, hey, wait a minute, you know, people are needing this functionality. Let's put it into those forms. And, oh, by the way they're doing it is pretty clear. You know, I mean, it's open source. There's no secret here. So that marking market sensing, that feedback mechanism is broken, right? I mean, these are pieces of function. I would love it if SP services went away from that perspective. That should be functionality that ought to be built into the product. So rather than looking at, you know, we're putting weird script on forms or we're putting files in the file system that we shouldn't, they should be looking at, well, what are the problems they're trying to solve with this? And can we give you better ways to do it? There seems to be an impermeable barrier going back to the product group around this stuff. You know, we can give them scenarios now that this is broken. We'll say maybe one NDA-ish thing that maybe I shouldn't, but I've been asked for, well, give us some scenarios that where you need to do this stuff. Well, the scenarios have been out there for years. You know, this isn't, the fact that you have to ask means that you haven't been paying attention to what SP services is used for. I think that's a shame. I think that's a total waste of, you know, brain power on Microsoft end, because they could be looking at all that crap that I've been doing, Band-Aid and fix stuff, and be putting in product enhancements that would put me out of business, and I'd be happy about that.
I think you see a lot of that from the people that are on the engineering side, that, and I don't think that this is unique to Microsoft, but I think that the people that are building the products and that are unique to the engineering side have an idea about how the product should work and how you should use the product. And then you go to the field and you see that the field is doing things that they didn't think of. I go back, I think that, you know, it's ironic that this is actually coming from Microsoft, but there was an ad, I don't know if you guys saw this, the Kinect ad from a couple of years ago. I think it aired on Thanksgiving, maybe 3 years ago, 2 years ago. And it was something along the lines of, it was talking about, you know, look at all these cool things we did with the first Kinect for Xbox, and how you could race and you could throw and you could jump and dance and all this kind of stuff. And it could show it to you on the screen. But then they said, you know, we released this API, and the coolest things that we've seen people do with Kinect is the stuff that we didn't think of, or like, you know, what we didn't think about, that's the coolest stuff. And I think that, or that's what was fascinating to them. So in this, I think we have to, you know, you have to expect that people are going to have different ideas about how they do stuff. And that's, you know, one of the cool concepts of all open source, is that you have this premise of, here's how it could be used. And you kind of look at how people are using it. It's like, whoa. If you know the history of Twitter, same thing. It was meant for a specific use case, and one of the founders got run off because he believed in that use case so much, but it was used for so many other things, for so much other stuff. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see kind of where this process goes. I hope of a few people I've talked to at Microsoft, they are receptive to all of this. They do generally want to find out what the challenges are, what they can do to make things better. I really hope to see that discussion kind of get more intense and to be more vigorous, the same way that we talk about with apps. But, you know, it just kind of, like the app model piece. I mean, hopefully we'll see some changes at office at the SharePoint conference in Las Vegas. But it's one of these things where we're supposed to be in a nimble cloud releasey kind of a play with 365, yet we have these very long periods of silence, that it's almost like if we have this huge discussion and flare up that happens 1 week, if we can just get to the weekend, Monday will start and everybody's going to forget about the stuff we talked about last week, and then it'll be a month past and we'll be okay. It feels too much like that's happening. It happened with the app model. It's happened with the discussions around the app model. I fear it'll happen with this. It's just these things. It gets to be really challenging. So, you know, hopefully that there's, you know, like maybe developer evangelism or something with Office 365, that people can, you know, start to kind of talk to these kind of messages and to reach out to the community and get more guidance and everything and documentation out there and really participating in the discussions, instead of it being such a point release thing. Or, you know, I guess the other frustration I have is that a lot of these discussions seem to be, I may be wrong, but seem to be happening with a few people. Now, I know I'm one of those people. Mark, you're one of those people. CJ, you're one of those people as well. About when these issues come up, they're like, well, tell us, you know, what scenarios you've been running into, and tell us when we need to see these things and what broke and this kind of stuff. It's like, this is a bigger thing. It's not 100 people that can give you the feedback. There's a lot of people that can do this. So,
well, those discussions actually, at least from my perspective, don't happen. And I wish they did. I know they talk to you a lot, but they don't talk to me at all. So, you know, even stepping back a little further, you know, one thing that's really important to remember is, you know, we're way too close to all of this, right? We have very strong opinions. We see what's going on more, you know, we get the tweets faster than anybody, right? We tell each other stuff. You know, those poor suckers who come in to work on Monday morning at 9 o'clock and fire up their machine and have to put in those forms again. You know, they have to enter the data into SharePoint. It's freaking broken, right? They don't care why. They don't care who did it. They don't care anything about it. They just say, this piece of it's not something I want to use anymore. And I've talked to these people. You know, I'm out here. I'm not in there, wherever there is, right? So that's the Microsoft's problem, right? It's not that we get pissed off because, frankly, you know, we care too much. Mm. It's that those end users, the people who are going to eventually just, you know, we talk about SharePoint adoption. It's not about adoption. It's about, I mean, first, you know, the first rule should be never piss people off, right? And that's what they're doing. And why is that good? You know, I mean, who does that serve? And I think it's all because the marketing gets, you know, everyone gets caught up in the marketing and these vast messages. And, you know, we got this great new forms thing coming. Sadie down in accounting doesn't give a shit. She wants to be able to do her job, right?
Yeah.
And that just totally gets lost in all of this. These little form enhancements are what make Sadie's job easier. And if they break, then she can't. And she just stops doing her job or does it another way and SharePoint gets a bad rap.
Yeah.
So that none of this is good.
Yeah.
You know, the UX is what people judge SharePoint by, not by whether you can write neat code on the server.
That's a good point.
That's true.
That's a good
point. Yeah, very
true. We've had a pretty good discussion here with this. I know we've just actually had a lot of in the last 5 minutes, but
I like to say it.
I'm going to get a couple more usages out of my little bleeper here.
I kept myself to that word, and I was very careful about that. It wasn't easy.
Oh, we broadcast in black and white, so unfortunately we don't have as much color. But, well, let me ask you guys before we wrap up here. Yes, I mean, Mark, I take it that those were your parting thoughts that you had there. I mean, I feel like I've kind of given enough of mine here. CJ, you have anything that you wanted to add to this discussion? Or
no, I think Mark's comments just now are absolutely spot on, right? Like, regardless of all this detail and minutiae of stuff that we as developers and people that build on SharePoint have to deal with, like, you know, his point that at the end of the day, all that really matters is that it's doing the right stuff for the users and they have a good experience is completely spot on. And that's really really good point.
Cool. Well, Mark, thank you very much for joining us as a first interviewee. Really appreciate it. And thanks for coming on. And as we will be looking forward to seeing you in Las Vegas in about a month at the SharePoint conference.
I guess if you never have another interviewee on, I'll know what happened.
No,
it's been great having you. Thanks for coming.
This has been fun.
Cool. All right. Thanks, guys.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.